This is Steve Hurley, and welcome to the Pivotal Outdoors Podcast, discussing hunting, fishing, and outdoor pursuits, swapping stories and feeling alive. Yeah, welcome back to the Pivotal Outdoors Podcast. I'm here with Jim Hale. I've wanted to get him on the podcast for a while now. He's been a mentor in the woods for me, whether it's whitetail or even trout fishing. And so for this podcast, we're going to cover like stories from the season, and Jim had a story. So Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to finally be on here.
If you want to give an introductory of kind of like your experience in the woods, a little bit of your background and kind of what you're into.
All right. I could go long. So I've been, this I believe was my 36th deer hunting season. So that would be, I think, 1985 I started. I grew up in central upstate New York and started hunting with my brothers. I'm the youngest of four boys, so they were really experienced by the time I got around to hunting. But we started doing deer drives. There was no stand hunting. That was kind of new. The stand hunters actually hated us deer drivers. But there was a lot of big woods where I grew up, so that was the only way to really get them moving. And it was wild times. Like, we'd just go out and you'd be on stand, and we'd have 20 to 25 guys. And you'd go out on stand, and guys would come through, and it wasn't silent pushes. It was full-on deer drives. So they're barking, and they're, you know, hitting sticks and everything. And the deer would be flying by. Like, you had to be good at quick shooting if you wanted a success up there.
So iron sights preferably.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You there's no way. And there was a lot of thick stuff you'd go through. There was a lot of open woods, but we would push the thick stuff. And then it was your turn to drive, and we'd go back and forth, and I just loved it. I didn't have success at that time. I saw a lot of deer, but I was new to, you know, shooting on the run and all that, but I just absolutely loved it. You know, I went off to school and the Army and different things, and I moved down south. And when I was hunting in Virginia is when I started, well, I bought my first tree stand and started stand hunting. And that was a completely different thing. Like, that was the time when Realtree and Buckmasters and all these videos were coming out and talking about scent control, and it was all new. And but I
hang on or climber? Or?
My first one was a climber. And this big metal thing, it was a monstrosity. It weighed 100 pounds. It was horrible, but it was very sturdy. And, you know, I'd come home and talk to my uncles and my brothers and my dad about scent control and all this. And they just laughed. They're like, oh, yeah, look at that buck that Uncle Chap got 20 years ago. He was smoking and, you know, wearing jeans. And I'm like, yeah, how many years ago? And 20. And what's he gotten since then? You know, so they didn't really take it seriously until I started having success and hunting in Virginia and scent control and stands and patterning and all that. I started shooting bucks, and I would come home every Thanksgiving with pictures, and all of a sudden they started buying camo and, you know, hunting from tree stands and washing their clothes. So it really, in everybody, it wasn't just me and my family, but at that time, the whole hunting scene was kind of doing the same thing, transitioning from the old school into, you know, the new ways, what we consider normal now. So yeah, I had a lot of success. Hunted for 10 years down south, and there's liberal bag limits in Virginia. So I shot something like 17 bucks in those 10 years, and then 22 years ago, moved to Pennsylvania, and my hunting success dwindled. I spent several years asking for permission on different places, no luck. And so I just continued driving down to Virginia. And finally, about 10 years ago, maybe, I got a small piece of property. And I've had different pieces of property here and there, but it's either been sold off or people have you know, moved or whatever. So, but this year finally had some good success, got a nice big 8-pointer. And other than that, it was a really tough season, but I was in the right place in the right time. So
Yeah. So for, you're talking about the property. Can you kind of describe whether it's big ag, open?
Yes.
Just so a layout.
This is a very small, it's about less than 35 acres. It's surrounded with acreage all around it. There's no agriculture, you know, so it's really a pass through. On years that there's good mass crop, you get acorns and you'll see deer coming through for that, but it's not a place that holds deer, especially not big bucks. You also have property surrounding it with guys with feeders, some legal, some not. Guys hunt 360 degrees around this property. So it's a tough place to hunt. You can see deer, but you got to put a lot of time in. And two creeks that run through. They kind of converge in this area called the Bowl. So there's, different elevation. The one side drops down into a bowl. Out of the bowl comes up, and the high side is even higher than the other side of the bowl. And that kind of just continues on this gradual uphill. And they usually pour down off that hill. Sometimes they'll come from the other side of the bowl. But it's tricky. You can be sitting there and watching deer come through the other side of the property. You'll move the other side of the property, and they'll come where you were sitting the last time. So it's real hard to pattern them. It's really just a place where you have to put in your time if you want something.
Are you seeing certain deer over and over again, or is it completely different deer or bucks, does? What's kind of like the ratio and the scene buck-wise?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I did use trail cams this year. Other years, it's spotty how I do it, because I've hunted this place so much that I know where they're coming through and how they're coming through. So last year they logged and it completely changed the pattern. So I got out the cameras and they were not moving at all like they used to. And so I spent the first few weeks, a month and a half of preseason, putting out cameras, moving around, trying to get an idea of where they were. And my stands were completely different than they have been every other year. And but I really wasn't seeing much movement at all. There were a few little bucks, most at night. Even the doe were sporadic, where they used to come through like clockwork. It was very odd. And this buck that I got, I'll tell you, this is the first deer that I've shot that I actually had on trail cam that I was going after. So that sounds weird.
He was on your hit list.
He was on my hit list, which
I usually don't have a hit list.
Me neither.
If I see him, I want to hit him.
Yeah. And I've never been, I'll see this is the kind of place where if you see a big buck on trail cam, you're like, oh, well, that's awesome. I wasn't there at the right time, because they're passing through. Chances of seeing them again are very slim. I'm sure some of the other bucks that I've shot over the years, I have pictures of, but none of them were big enough to really remember. So late October, I actually wasn't in the woods. I was at my daughter's volleyball game. Even though we knew she wasn't going to play because she had been sick that week, I decided to go and support the team. And check the trail cam. Sure enough, while I was watching volleyball, this big 8-point walked right by my stand in broad daylight. So like every other year, I thought, all right, that was the one time a big buck comes through and I blew it. Then all of a sudden, he started showing up on all of my cameras. Unfortunately, always at night, but it was, pretty encouraging to see that he was there. I knew from talking to some of the neighbors that they were seeing him as well. So it was just a matter of time before he either got pushed completely out of the area or somebody got him. And let me see. I guess it was October 5th. I had off. I was going to hunt all day. I sat in the stand till noon. I didn't see a thing, not even a doe. And I said, and that's pretty much how the season had been going. I said, I have too much to do. I'm getting out of here. Maybe I'll come back later. Walking out, I checked the trail cam at my other stand, And sure enough, he walked by at 10 a.m. at my other stand. I'm like, oh, I just cannot make the right decisions. So I hunted. I couldn't hunt the next morning. I hunted the next evening, and deer were everywhere. I saw a little bucks, saw a doe, and then I had a really nice eight coming down to me. I turned the line up for a shot. I had Evercom in my pocket, fell out, hit my tree stand, rang against that, hit the ground, and of course the deer stops and doesn't spook, but doesn't like what he saw or heard, and walks away. And I'm thinking, this is my season. Like, nothing is going right. This could have happened at any time. I'm out there for hours, and this thing falls and makes noise right at the pivotal time. And I was just really discouraged, but I thought, okay, deer are moving. I need to be back out here as soon as I can. So I swapped some days around, took off Monday. Monday morning, I sneak in, get in really early, get up in my stand. As soon as it starts getting light, the wind shifts and is blowing right to where these deer had come from. And I thought, here we go again. Just nothing is going right.
And this is mid-October, you'd say?
This is now we're into November 8th. This was okay. November, yeah, one of my brother's birthdays. And so, you know, deer were moving on the 6th. I had seen a bunch of chasing. And that's the 6th was the day that, you know, I scared off that 8. So I'm ready. I got in quietly, didn't bump anything. And then the wind shifts and I'm thinking, I'm never going to see a deer. And it's barely light. The sun had only been up, or actually the sun wasn't up yet. It was civil twilight. It was maybe 15 minutes into civil twilight. And I hear a noise. I turn off to my right. Deer never come from that area. It was upwind of me. And here's a doe with a big buck behind her. And it's the one from the trail cam. Turns out I ended up having 60-some pictures of this deer. Only two of them in daytime.
So just to slow you down for a second.
Yeah, sorry.
So you're saying that you got in there and the wind you thought was bad because it was going out some way.
Yeah, it was going the way the deer come from.
Okay, and then that was almost just like a blessing that it happened this way.
Oh, if I had good wind, I never would have seen this deer because he came from a completely different spot. Would have been
downwind, but because of today, that day's, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, because normally the wind is coming downhill and the deer come from uphill. If the wind had stayed the way it was, this deer never would have come out. So same thing with that Evercom falling out. That was a blessing in disguise too, because I would have gotten this much smaller deer and never been out there this Monday when this giant comes out.
And can you just explain what that Evercom is? I've heard of it. I've never used it. And just for the listeners, so they have an idea what you're talking about.
So I go back and forth with the products I buy. You know, I'll get stuff and I'll be like, why do I waste my money on things? But on the other hand, I'm like, you know, got to try it.
Yeah, if it helps 1%, right. You know, a little bit, might as well use it.
And so I hadn't bought scent. I hadn't bought anything this year other than, you know, scent-free laundry detergent. But I was in Walmart or Dick's or wherever I had been to get something, and I saw this Evercom, and I had been seeing a bunch of commercials for it. A friend of mine has used it successfully in the past, so I figured I'd try. And what it is, it comes in a, it's like a deodorant stick, and it smells like a bedding area. And, you know, there's a long story as to how it was developed, but basically a guy that worked at a deer farm didn't have time to change out of his work clothes. So he had been, you know, in there where the deer bed in the barn, smelled like the bedding area, went out to hunt without changing, and deer were all over him. Didn't matter which wind direction, they were calm. And so, long story short, they developed this product that emulates that scent. So I figured I'd give it a try. Earlier in the season, I had had a doe come in downwind of me, and she got real spooky, started stomping. So I pulled out the Evercom. Now, I had put it on leaves and sticks below my stand, but I thought, let me just take the top off, because as soon as you take the top off, you can smell it. Took it off quietly. The wind's blowing toward her. She ended up calming right down, walking right under me. And I was like, wow, that's kind of interesting. You know, that's just one data point. Then the next time I used it, I had a little six-pointer. Same thing. He came in downwind, actually the direction that the big one ended up coming from, where the wind usually blows down to. He got real spooky, started stiffening up, and same thing. I took the top off, let the wind blow it down, and he calmed down and fed, stayed around me for a half an hour downwind of me. So
that's a good chunk of time.
Yeah, so
it's not like he just kind of easily walked off.
I mean, no, he calmed down. Same thing with the doe. They not only calmed down, but they stayed in my area. And it was 20, 30 minutes after that six-pointer that it fell out of my pocket. So obviously, when I put it back in my pocket, I didn't put it far enough in. So it was my fault. But yeah, just those were two examples. They're still a bit anecdotal, but it worked. So I'm going to continue to use it. And you rub it on everything in your area, and I'll probably end up taking the wafers that you can stick on your hat and rubbing on there, because the wind that's coming through, that's blowing past me, I want to have that scent, and that's what worked with that buck and that doe. So
yeah, I'll have to check that out. I've used the wafers like mm-hmm. years ago, like the fresh earth
scent. Yeah.
And I always think, well, maybe this is too much production.
That's,
you know, maybe it's not real earth scent. I know it smells earth scent to us.
Right.
But I mean, if the Evercom,
you know,
if that's just wafting and they smell that, I mean, that's something I could probably at least test out, throw money at, you know?
Yeah. You got to try everything at least once.
Yeah.
So back to the morning of my success.
Yeah, I think we were at where the wind was opposite what normally was, and the buck was following a doe in.
Yep. So I see him coming, and he just looks huge with his head down behind her. And I grab my binoculars, and I start raising them. I'm thinking, what am I doing? I know this deer. I don't have to look at him through the binoculars. He pops up, so I put them down. He looks really far away. I'm 23 feet in the air. He's down a road a bit, so he looks further than he is. So I ranged him, and he was 44 yards. Now, that's normally outside of where I will shoot, but I had just looked at my range book, and I knew where that fell, what pin to use exactly. I literally just looked at my range book 30 seconds before, and he comes out, and normally I would try to call him in, and I was about to, because he pops out, the doe runs back into the woods, so he does a 180 and stops. He's quartering hard away from me. I'm not going to take that shot. I go to grab my grunt tube. Of course, I'm shaking like crazy. And she takes off to the right, and he turns. He's completely broadside, and he just stops. And I put the grunt tube down. I look at him. He's calm, tails down. He's completely concentrated on her, and he's stock still. And I thought, no better time than now. So I picked my pin, set it on his shoulder, and shot. He actually dropped in sight. So it was successful. I'm glad I didn't try calling him in. Who knows what would've happened.
Yeah.
Probably that hard on a doe, he never would have heard me. Might have come back later, but I get, you know, chided a lot about waiting too long, you know, trying to get them in for the 15, 20-yard shot, passing up a lot of further shots, and this time I just wasn't going to do. Everything was perfect, so I took it and I was successful.
Nice. Now, what would I know you've had a lot of success, like you said, Virginia, even up here, and you have some really nice mounts. This one, what do you think would be like an estimated score and kind of like layout of anything notable off the antlers that would describe this buck particularly?
So the coolest thing about this buck is the brow tines. They're 7 to 8 inch brow tines, which is not typical for any deer really, but around here you typically don't see that. So as soon as you see that, like, this deer stands out. He's also very heavy and a good mass. The mass carries out. It's, I think it was 4.5 at the bases, and it carries out all the way. I think the smallest mass measurement was still over 3. So good mass and very wide. The buck looks huge. So when I put it, I score deer for the Northeast Big Buck Club. When I posted it to the site, numbers started coming in, people guessing, and like, oh, 145, 140, one. Personally, when I looked at it, I thought mid-130s. I don't like to guess typically, but that's what I thought. I hate to say it on, you know, recording, yeah. But
he's well, actually- at least you put out the Northeast Big Buck Club out there. So this, for listeners, this isn't some random hunter saying, oh, it was a monster, like a big fish story. These are pretty accurate measurements, even on the conservative side, you could say, right?
So. Yeah. So, you know, and I posted to our group where most of the guys on there are measurers. There's a lot of guys that have had deer scored. And so everybody's thinking this buck is huge. So I got it back from the butcher, and I started looking at it, and I'm thinking, you know, its main beams are pretty small. He's wide, but they don't wrap back around. And great, you know, brow tines, but he starts to lose as he goes out. And the one side, every tine was broken at least an inch off. So I'm thinking, he's not really going to score as high as I originally thought. And he actually, believe it or not, only scores 120. And
really?
Yeah, and all these people coming in thinking in the 140s. I personally would have thought in the 130s from the trail cam pick. That's why pitchers are deceiving. I still would never pass this deer up, especially in Pennsylvania. And if you see the picture of him, you wouldn't believe he was only 120.
Well, especially you talk about some of the tips are busted off.
Yeah.
That's a lot of inch lost. I mean, yeah. Score wise.
Yeah.
So,
but even with that, he would only been in the mid 120s, and it's one of the deceptive things about scoring deer, and that's why when I'm doing a show scoring deer, people say, "What do you think?" I never guess. I'm like, I'm a measurer. I'll measure it for you, but I'm not going to guess. You know, I might guess with the other scorers, just take bets and things, but I never tell customers. Because there's so much that can trick you when it comes to scoring. And one of those things is main beam length. And that's one of the things that will add the most to the score. The thing that adds the least to score is spread, inside spread. Everybody wants this big, wide buck. And this one had a great spread. It was over 20 inches. So, you know, looks awesome on the hoof. But 85 or 90% of the world-class deer have 18-inch or less inside spread. Adds very little to the overall score. The best thing is main beam length, obviously tine length, and then mass. And mass is another one of those things that can be really deceptive, how many points you can put on a deer. So, or scoring points. So, yeah, he didn't score great, but he looks bigger than all of my other mounts. Honestly, he's just a really impressive deer and really happy with him.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good because I know you mentioned you usually wait for the perfect shot and you're much more selective than I am. I'm more of the opportunity buck hunter, legal buck hunter, but I get excited for, I get doe fever. So, but I'm really glad that this turned out to be a good season, especially when it started off so rough.
Yeah.
Anything you could think of that, I guess the buck was really chasing, so he wasn't really thinking about scent too much. I know the wind was good for you. Did you consider anything when you're going into your stand? Did they cross over your tracks at all? Or they were out of their mind. They weren't even thinking of that.
No, so I'll come in from a different direction and I'll park at this one gate and walk through. And that morning, I just, something said, don't do it. Go the long way around. Where I normally park, it would have been a much easier walk. But I don't know. I can't explain it. So yeah. Everything fell together, like scaring that little one, you know, different things like that. The wind shifting, it all led up to getting this. And that's, after years and years of hunting, you look back and you realize stuff like that happens all the time. Like things line up. There's so much luck involved in hunting. And I just, last minute, you know, it was eating at me. So last minute I switched and I parked in a different location, walked the long ways around uphill, had to go very slow so I wasn't sweating. And if I had come in the other way, more than likely I would have jumped these. So as far as my path in, if they had gone another 15 yards, they would have crossed my tracks. So I put Evercom on my boots, so that would have been interesting. But yeah, they never had an opportunity to cross where I walked in.
Oh, that's something I might have to try. I mean, I spray my boots down, but just another way to use the Evercom.
Yep.
I guess there's some luck. But I mean, from what I'm hearing, it's almost sticking with it.
Yeah.
And then also the other takeaway, especially with that insert, is I guess doing the right thing, not the easy thing.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy. I mean, it's very uncomfortable hunting. For listeners who aren't hunters, I'm not saying that to complain, but you know, you're up early, you're usually moving through the dark, you're cold, or you start sweating, you sit down, then you get cold. A lot of times it's hard for me to relax and stay because I'm thinking about other things I should be doing. I think a lot of people, they're like, oh, this will be good enough, and they'll take this route or do this thing. So I think that insert, which we didn't talk about that before, but it sounds like you did what was the right thing tactics-wise, not just let me jump out of the truck and because I have an hour left to hunt.
Right.
Jump in the tree.
Yeah, it's you know, it's kind of a no-brainer. But I think we all fall into that. The no-brainer is, in order to be successful, I got to do things right. But we all fall into that, you know, it'd be a lot easier to take the short way. It'd be a lot easier to sleep in another hour or walk in here. But over the years, the times I've been the most successful is when I hunt hard and hunt right. Especially over the past few years, I've gotten a little lazy with it. I'm on this small piece of property, don't see a lot of trophy class deer, don't see any really, seen some nice bucks. And I've kind of got into, you know, I'm out here for the relaxation and the fun. If I get one, great. As soon as I saw this guy on trail cam, I locked down and went back to my old ways of hunting where I was doing it right, hunting hard, being quiet, walking in. You know, you tend to want to get in quickly. You figure, oh, if I get in as quick as I can, get up in my stand, good. And you don't know where those deer are, especially on a property like this. So I walked in quietly. I stopped every once in a while, so it sounded like a deer walking in. Got up very early. But those are the type of things you have to do, especially, you know, some guys are blessed with properties where they know, okay, at 7:30, they're going to walk from here to here. I just got to wait for my buck. Now, I hunt properties where they might come from this direction. So you have to do as much as you can correctly.
And external factors of, of neighbors. It's not like it's not like it goes up to a field edge or anything. It's woods on woods.
Yep.
And I guess with it being logged, that property, I know that messed up their thing, but their kind of patterns, which made it a lot harder for you. But I guess maybe it forced you to get out to you couldn't default to, oh, well, that stand always works.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, crap, now I have to really, I don't know, maybe pay attention to the cameras more.
Yeah.
Because you can't go off of past experience now.
It was a bit of a wake-up call as far as if you want to get a deer, you got to put the work in. I had gotten really lazy and just, like you said, defaulted to going in the same tree I do year after year. And which, you know, I've had success. But
and it can work, yeah.
Yeah, it can work. But this is the first time on this property, anyways, that I've seen a buck that I wanted and I ended up getting it. And this stand, it was a completely new location. I actually ended up moving it away from where I was originally, even from where I had been seeing them on camera. I had this deer all over the place on camera, but anytime I sat, I wasn't seeing them. So I had gone in on that Saturday before, and I kind of just, in my head, went over to the property and thought about where I thought these deer were converging, because I put together the pieces of where I was seeing this buck, and I just thought, okay, I think he's coming down and hitting this area and going off onto this property. So I walked and went to where I thought, and there were rubs everywhere. And there were scrapes and rubs. And it was an area that I hadn't hunted in a long time. You know, so I'm like, this, I think this is a spot. So even though I had no trail cam pics from there, just based on the other information, I thought it's where I should be, and turned out I was right.
Yeah, that's awesome. So now that you got your buck tag filled in PA, what are you looking for now? I mean, before we get to next year, are you doing any doe hunting or any other pursuits right now?
Yeah, well,
I'd besides like, working on your house all the time?
Yeah. Yeah, I got some projects going on at the house I'd like to finish. I have four daughters, and they love venison, so they're like, yeah, Dad, one's not enough. So, yeah, I'll definitely be out. I got a couple doe tags. I want to fill them. I'd like to get some coyote hunting done. I plan on bringing my nephew out hunting up in upstate New York for some coyotes. So,
do you think you'd ever try to eat a coyote?
I would not. Nope. Not interested.
I'm not interested, but there's a little thing of curiosity in me. It's like, well, if you get one, maybe, or if you get a handful, maybe keep a backstrap or something. I don't know.
I will, if I get one, I'll bring it home to you. But there's some things I just, curiosity isn't enough to make me do it.
Yeah. I say that, but I've said that about raccoons too, and I haven't been able to make the jump to eat a trash panda.
Yeah.
So
I watched them cooking on TV, and the whole time I'm like, okay, when are they going to say just kidding? And they never did. And I thought, no, that's not for me.
Yeah. Are you going to get any squirrels at all? I know you have tons of squirrels, and I'm always looking for squirrel meat. So if you knock any down, let me know if you're trying to get rid of any squirrel meat.
Yeah. Man, the places I hunt, if squirrels were a record book animal, I'd probably be world famous because there's squirrels everywhere. So I do plan. I just ordered 800 rounds of 22 ammo. So, yeah, we'll put a few
squirrels. That sounds like 800 squirrels.
We'll definitely have a squirrel outing soon.
You know, there was a buddy of mine who he's from up in Maine. He's been on the podcast for Derek. He was talking about squirrels and got a gray squirrel, and he's like, oh, yeah, this is great. You know, I barely see gray squirrels. And even down in Virginia, I think that he was saying there's like four different variations, but gray squirrels, he was like, wow, that's cool to see a gray squirrel. And I don't know about you, but that's basically all I see.
Yeah.
We're at is it's just gray squirrels everywhere.
Around
I don't
here,
see anything different, really.
Yeah, around here, it's all gray. It's funny you say that because over Thanksgiving, I went up and hunted with my brothers in the big woods up in New York. First time I'd hunted up there in almost 20 years, and it's all red squirrels. You know, if you've not seen them, they're in between a chipmunk and a gray squirrel. They're about halfway in between size-wise and, you know, behavior-wise. They're a little more squirrely. And they're all over the place. They make a ton of noise. And it was really neat for me being back up there, seeing them and not seeing the grays. Yeah, I never really thought about it until I went back up there and said, oh, yeah, this mostly reds here.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yep.
Awesome story. I'm glad to hear about the buck and hopefully filling some doe tags. If people wanted to see the picture of the buck, or can they follow you on Instagram at all?
Sure. They want to follow me on Instagram. It's JMH7331. It's JM as in Michael. So the deer is up there.
Cool. Very cool. Thanks for coming on. Jim, anything else before you jump off?
I don't think so. You know me, I could tell a million stories. So yeah. Be careful what you ask for.
Well, hopefully we'll do some more podcasts
with
other stuff.
So yeah, and if
it was fun.
If you know, any of your listeners, especially locally, are interested in getting deer scored, like I had mentioned, I score for the Northeast Big Buck Club. So you can check that out sometime. It's a nonprofit. You know, I'd love to score the deer. Usually that's how I enjoy deer, is scoring someone else's. This is the first time in a while I've gotten to score my own that scores halfway decent. So reach out to me on Instagram or through Steve and be happy to score some deer up.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Jim.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Hey, thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to like and subscribe. And if you'd like to support this podcast to sustain future episodes, feel free to click on the listener support link in the show notes. There'll be more content coming, and if there are any questions or comments, you can reach me on Instagram at Outdoors with Steve or at Pivotal Outdoors.